Welcome, everybody, to episode 338 of WordPress Weekly for Thursday. Oh, Wednesday.
I see what you did there.
Very November funny. 14th, 2018. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by James Jacoby. Yeah.
You know, dates are hard. We've been working on them with Sugar Calendar and other plugins for a while. Dates are not easy, but it's Wednesday, and it's November. We have the episode number right. We do need like a pre-flight check on the pre-show where we like go over all of the numbers and dates, I think.
Well, usually I have this covered. I do the show notes for next week immediately after the show, at least some of the other stuff. Anyways, that just shows you how time's flying. We don't know what day it is. But I see you're back in the good old state of Wisconsin.
I'm back. Back at the office, back with my original crappy audio source that's hopefully better than it was last week or the week before. We've tuned it a little bit. Hopefully it sounds better for everybody. Sorry if all of our listeners that were subjected to my poor audio quality. I think hopefully it's better now.
So we'll get into some topics today. It's going to be, I think, a lighthearted show. There isn't that much really to cover, so... But before that, so you drove down to Kansas to open up, help Pippin open up a brewery first. How is the, I haven't driven in this country, in the U.S., I haven't driven past Chicago. So what's it like driving down to Kansas? And then how was the opening?
The opening was awesome. So Carrie and I drove from East Troy, Wisconsin to Hutchinson, Kansas, which is about an 11-hour drive if you take your time. There is a whole lot of nothing that direction. In fact, once you get to Kansas, there is an AM radio station that we listen to. We've made the drive twice now, AM 1680. And this radio station is donation run, and they talk about all of the historical sand hills areas of Kansas that are not just hundreds of acres or thousands of acres, but 10,380 empty acres of Kansas that are like protected by the state. That are very, very empty. Some of them are farmland, but Pippin and I had we talked a little bit in Kansas about how proud that Kansas citizens are to own property to protect it. They'll buy it to keep it empty, which is an interesting value proposition because. Generally, you buy property because you want to build on it or because you think it's some good economic reason. You want to put a business on it or your home or whatever. But no, it's people in Kansas like to buy property to protect it. Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of acres. So the drive, I think, is quite pretty, but it is a kind of flat, long, boring sort of drive most of the way. We went through Kansas City. We took I-80, and then we hooked up to I-35. So anyone who's listening that's familiar can kind of trace our steps. But the opening was really super great. It was very cold in Hutchinson, Kansas. It was 15 degrees, which it was colder there than it was in Wisconsin. So you expect for it to maybe not be real crowded, but the brewery's very pretty. They did an outstanding job. Pippin, his brother, some helpers, his family, dad, I think helped a little bit. It looks gorgeous. They had, I think probably I'd have to look. Carrie would know because she wrote the menu on exactly how many beers they had, but I think there was probably 8 or 9 of their own beers plus 3 from like a partner brewery that's in Kansas City. Thursday night, it was a little slow, which we expect it to be. The Friday night was their opening night, and it was like packed. They stayed ribbon cutting at 11, and then by the time it was 5 o'clock, it was like standing room only. And then I think Carrie and I had been there too long, and I kind of got over-socialized by folks, and we're like, 7:30 comes around, and it's time to head back to the house. And so we had our fun and helped out a little bit. Carrie got roped into pouring some beers for people, and some other Sand Hills development employees showed up. And
well, that's pretty cool. So, I mean, so the brewery, it's a thing now. I mean,
it is a thing.
He is running a business, a brewery business.
And we should have him on the show, I think, because
It's overdue.
He not only is it overdue, but we've talked a lot about how opening a brick and mortar store really has taught him a lot about things that could that are applicable to a remote workforce and to software development. And so,
that'd be a good conversation.
To talk about just things he's learned and things that could apply in either direction. So I think I accidentally set us up with a future guest on the show. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun. I'm happy to have gone and done it.
That sounds like a great conversation we could have with Pippin.
I think we can get him
cool on. Cool stuff.
We can figure it out.
All right. So let's get into some WordPress stuff. The WordPress 5.0 release date has been pushed back to November 27th. So as discussed at the Core Dev Chat, the initial target date of 19th has been, it's not going to make it, so they're going to aim for the 27th. Matthias Ventura outlined a new plan where Beta 4 and Beta 5 releases will coincide with Gutenberg 4.3 and 4.4 releases, which, by the way, you know, I would have to go back and read about this whole process of WordPress 5.0 and what's being worked on and Because on paper, it just seems weird that they continue to work and add things and fix things in the Gutenberg plugin before WordPress 5.0 is released to the public. I don't understand why that's happening. So I have to look into that. Anyways, RC1 is expected to be released November 19th, and he says that the contributors will be posting daily high-level updates on the current status of the release. And this is something that you can already see. I think there was a post yesterday on the Make WordPress Core blog, and they're going to start publishing daily updates on what's going on with Gutenberg. So right now, the release date for 5.0 is November 27th, which is, I believe, the week after Thanksgiving. Or is Thanksgiving the last Thursday? I don't even know the holidays. Anyways, it's on a Tuesday, and that's actually rubbed some feathers for a lot of people who participate in the nonprofit sector, because that's called Giving Tuesday, and that is a huge day for a lot of businesses out there.
They just won't be able to deploy a WordPress update is the problem. There's any time during the holidays. I know that people have scrutinized probably me and other people saying this, but there's no time during the holidays that is a good time to do any kind of code deployment. It's the end of the year and people need to and want to, but between Black Friday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Saint Nick, Halloween, the end of October through the end of the year, there's someone is going to have a hard time trying to update a WordPress site. There's just no good time. And you brought up an interesting point about that I want to touch on if we can, which is not just Gutenberg that's being worked on and having features built on GitHub. It is the 2019 theme also. This is the first time that it really, aside from other the detached pieces like unit tests and things like that, where active feature development is happening in a way that is outside of a WordPress core or Subversion or Track. Gutenberg is actively being developed in parallel with WordPress core, the same as 2019 is, and that is happening on GitHub. It's not happening via the official WordPress Track repository. And so it is a first for WordPress. It's not a first for other projects in the world. But we have some growing pains with this, I think, as a community and developers and contributors, that the number of channels and the activity that is happening is helpful to the teams that it is helping, but it is inconvenient and a little complicated for folks that are trying to keep up with what is going on, because the 2019 theme, the folks that are working on the 2019 theme have their own way of doing things that is not necessarily the same as the way that the Gutenberg team is doing things. They are doing things on GitHub, but how to file an issue is different, and the timeline on those issues getting addressed is different. So these are separate teams working towards a similar goal. And so this is probably the first time, in my opinion, in my experience, that WordPress is experiencing the growing pains that like a modern, like a company would experience that has separate teams, like that are working on things that need to come cohesively together. And at a company where you've got 100, 500, 5,000 employees, there is no way that you could know what is going on between all of those other teams. This is the first time where you really cannot know everything that is going on in WordPress core anymore. What's going on in Gutenberg, the updates on the Make blog are critical, because there's no way you could pay attention to all of it. The same with 2019. There's just so much changing and going on that there's no way, if you're working on multi-site or you're working on Gutenberg, that you know everything that's going on in the 2019 theme. So when I think about it that way, I think that the growing pains are pretty natural. And I have a lot of empathy and understanding for the folks that are living it all day, every day, myself occasionally one of those people. But it feels a lot like that. It like this is not anything new, but we're experiencing it together for the first time. So it'll get better, I think, but it might get worse too. More projects, more things going on. But I was thinking about it today because it's cold in Wisconsin. We had some snow. I really look forward to the holiday releases. Maybe I shouldn't, and it's inconvenient, and I know that, but it starts to be this temperature, and it starts to be like I want to sit at home and I want to pay more attention to other things. And I look forward to the wintry WordPress releases, like the betas. Well, of course, I'm running beta on my blog. So let's deploy that out to production. Let's see how Gutenberg works and is doing. I don't know. I like the holidays.
So Gutenberg and controversy. Two words in the same sentence. That always makes for something that's interesting. But Matt Mulliweg, he actually joined attendees. He attended WordCamp Portland, Oregon, and he did a Q&A session. The video recording is now available on WordPress.tv if you want to go take a look at that. No, first off, before we get into some of the questions and his responses, kudos to Matt for going out in public before WordCamp US, the State of the Word, and actually doing a Q&A, considering everything that's been going on lately the past few months. So kudos to that. And let's see, a few of the questions asked Matt about some of the recent controversies that were going on with Gutenberg. And I'll just quote some of Matt's answers here. And he addressed some of the controversies more in depth. And quote, he says, "The tough part of any open source project, there's kind of a crucible of open source development, which can sometimes be more adversarial and sometimes even acrimonious. Working within the same company, you can kind of assume everyone is rowing in the same direction. In a wide open source ecosystem, some people might actually want the opposite of what you're doing because it might be in their own economic self-interest or for any number of reasons." And he continues, "I liken it much more to being a mayor of a city than being a CEO of a company. I've done WordPress now for 15 years, so I'm pretty used to it. It might seem kind of controversial if you're just coming in, but this is not the most controversial thing we've ever brought into WordPress. The last time we had a big fork of WordPress was actually when we brought in WYSIWYG for the first time. Maybe there's something about messing with the editor that sets people off," end quote. So something in there that I kind of rings a bell that pops out to me is when he says, "Working within the same company, you can kind of assume everyone is rowing in the same direction." And that pops out at me because if we look at the people who have been in charge and in leadership roles for Gutenberg, they're automaticians. Mm-hmm. They work for Matt, and Matt is their boss. If you look at phase two and phase three, the people in those leadership roles are automaticians.
Right.
So maybe part and parcel that is so he can those people in those positions, he can I don't know assume, but maybe I mean he knows that they're all rowing the same direction that he wants to go with WordPress, and he doesn't have to battle any adversarial or people in the open source community that want to go the opposite way.
And I think that's 100% right. Like that's, I think that that much is kind of so obvious that. Every time that something like that happens, it really just legitimizes the idea that this never sat very comfortably with me, because there, it is a healthy thing to row the other direction sometimes. In fact, you know, depending on the kind of ship that you are, Theseus's ship that you are rebuilding, you may sometimes steer into the wind or into the waves in order to stay strong or safe. So there is the metaphor breaks down quick, but I get what he's saying. And when you're put on the spot during a Q&A, I'm not going to be critical of the and pick people's words apart. But I think you're right that it is no mistake that you pick the people that are under your employ to complete the work that you are paying them to do, because you don't know that a volunteer, you do not always know that a volunteer is going to go or row the metaphorical direction that you expect them to. And that's partly why with BuddyPress and BBPress, I feel like I've always had a good working relationship with Matt and folks at Automattic, where we know the direction that we want for something like BBPress to go, and we know that the importance of it on WordPress.org in the forums and everything, that regardless of being employed or not, that we've always understood how important that BBPress is to WordPress and WordPress.org and the community and ecosystem and everything else. So there are good examples in the community of not needing to be an Automattic employee and still being able to succeed or lead projects to success. Even multi-site, largely led by Jeremy Felt, but also many others in the community that are not Automattic employees. Or
So let me ask you this. So we're still WordPress as a project is still going to have tons of contributors, people uploading patches, maybe one-off patches through Subversion, mm-hmm. through Trek, mm-hmm. but at the influential leadership level, the core devs, the people leading certain huge aspects of WordPress, if all of those people are automaticians, Automattic employees,
mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think that's a beneficial or good? I know that rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I mean, now WordPress becomes sort of this business type project or something.
So it depends on who you are and your perspective of WordPress and what your perception of the individuals are and what Automattic means to you. And so there is definitely very inherent strength in having Automattic or Automattic employees lead things, the same as if Facebook with React or Google and Android or anything else, if they didn't have a big influential company behind them, the project would not be perceived as being as successful as it is. Arguably, you could look at a project like Vue in comparison to React as one of those where when it lacks the oomph of millions of dollars worth of development or backing or project leadership or what have you, everyone just naturally goes towards the bigger company, the bigger backed thing. And so to lose Automattic's support in things would be a huge blow to WordPress as an open source project. I think that is one of the things that is undeniable. If all of a sudden Automattic completely dropped out of WordPress development, what would happen? Nothing good, I think, would come from that. I think we would only have a lot of chaos and other people. It's like a stock market. People would just drop out. Everyone would unplug from it. But more importantly, I think it is the placement of automatic employees in leadership positions that is more worrisome. And it goes against the past 15 years of WordPress core development, that it was always about it being a meritocracy or about it being earned. And so whether or not,
you know, in the past, it felt like core developers, the people who are making the software, you had to get buy-in from them. Right. For features or a certain direction. And it always seemed like Matt had the final say because this is his project. Mm-hmm. He has always been and always will be the project leader. But if you look at this in a certain perspective, it's in a way, it's like kind of smart, because if you're the project leader and you don't this may sound mean, but if you don't necessarily care about the buy-in from the core developers or the people that you need to get buy-in from, like you had in the past, to go a certain direction, well, I'll just have people who work for me in these certain roles, and now they have no choice. You're going to go the way I say we're going to go.
Well, and it's 50-50, right? And we've talked about like the post from John Blackburn before, where if you don't have strong leadership, people are upset. But if you have the wrong leadership, people are also upset. And so, In my opinion, and this is just me speaking personally, I have never really liked that there is a ceiling in terms of WordPress core influence, and that ceiling comes down to one person, but that one person doesn't always put their own personal opinion or stamp or words behind things. Instead, they're in a position which is a position that I haven't been in myself, so it's hard to say how I would personally deal with it. But if I had 500 or 1,000 employees to put to task on things, would I not be doing that? I probably would be. Of course I would. Like, I can pay you to do this work, and I trust you to do it in the way that I envisioned it. I feel like that is a very powerful position to be able to have. It's when there are other people that are working really hard that are not under your employ or my employ, and they have strong opinions and ideas and feelings on things. And for me to shut those down is not a thing that I think I would do. Like, my moral compass for me personally, the direction that I would go would be to consider the things that people are saying very deeply and to decide whether or not other people see things that I don't see, and try to trust them to help steer the ship, because it shouldn't come down to one person. Something that is this big is not like the Titanic had a captain, but it had 50,000 other subsystems that it needed to steer the ship, and the thing still sank. And so whether or not you need more systems or better leadership or captains are all things that you can scrutinize. But if it was my ship and I was in a position to be able to lead it, I think I would probably say the same things that Matt says and probably approach problem solving these problems the same as Matt does. But I think I would probably do it differently also. My priorities, I think, are in a different place.
So, of course, accessibility was brought up at this Q&A.
Yeah.
And someone had asked Matt's opinion about what's been going on with accessibility, and his response was, quote, it's a long quote, but we're not going to get into the whole thing, but I wanted to mention this part. He says, accessibility has been core to WordPress from the very beginning. It's part of why we started the adoption of web standards and accessibility things. We've been a member of the web standards project for many, many years. We did kind of have some project management fails in this process, where we had a team of volunteers that felt like they were disconnected from the rapid development that was happening with Gutenberg. There's definitely some things we could do better in the future, I think that we need, I don't know if it makes sense to have separate accessibility as a separate kind of process from the core development. It really needs to be integrated at every single stage. And then he goes on to describe what they've been able to accomplish in Gutenberg. They've closed over 200 issues. But again, one of the things that he says that that people should take note of is that it really needs to be integrated at every single stage, which is one of the loudest arguments that accessibility advocates have been saying throughout this what you want to call controversy, the accessibility of Gutenberg, that it seems like it's been bolted on, but I mean, it is true. Matthias and the team have been working on accessibility, fixing things and here and there as the project has evolved. I mean, there's still a lot of work left there to go, but to hear Matt Mulloway say that it needs to be incorporated at every single stage, I mean, that should be reassuring. But again, I think some people out there will say, you know, actions are louder than words.
Actions, and these are things we already know. Like, and there's no penalty for doing a bad job. You can be part of the working group and still do a bad job with accessibility. No one kicks you out for doing a bad job with meeting accessibility standards. Or 2 years ago when the accessibility coding standards were put into place for WordPress core and they were largely ignored for Gutenberg development. So it's important that these questions be answered, but this is nothing new. This is all stuff that I think we already know. And this is, again, Matt's, these specific Q&As, not to be real critical, because people are going to listen to the show and hear me go on forever about nothing too, but these are classic non-answers for a lot of these. These are, yes, we know what we already know, but there's no acknowledgement of the things that are changing in order to make any of this better. It's just, yes, we need to do better, but there's no, why was it so bad? And there's no, what are we doing to fix it? And that's what I think the answers that people are looking for, and those answers just simply aren't there. The thing about accessibility with Gutenberg that is probably the thing that I would have said is that Mac OS or OS X was Apple's operating system for decades, and it was and remains highly accessible. There are lots of things in it to make it a tool and an operating system that anyone can use regardless. But when iOS first came out, it was not accessible, period, really. It really had no accessibility in it. You, aside from not even being able to copy and paste, there was no multitasking. There was no high contrast mode. None of the things that you would expect to have already been in place in Mac OS existed in iOS. They did not, they were not part of their new operating system. And so if Gutenberg was a truly different piece of software, like opposite of WordPress, it would almost be easier to understand or work with, the same as iOS was different than Mac OS. The fact that Gutenberg was built to be grafted into WordPress set the expectation for everyone that it would be as accessible as WordPress already was. It isn't. And so that is where the lesson, I think, is learned here, is that if you're gonna remove things from WordPress, you do that in a separate fork of WordPress. You pull it out and you make it Backpress, you make it some other thing so that it can get worked on independently outside of WordPress. But to build something separately with the intent of bringing it back in, if I made an iOS app today that was not accessible, if I coded a Mac OS app or a Windows application today that was not as accessible as the other ones out there, I would expect fully to be scrutinized for not doing as good as what is already the status quo. And that's the part of it that I think needs addressing that Matt hasn't really addressed yet.
So the Q&A finished up with Matt says, quote, 5.0 is almost like the starting point. We should all expect just as much time to be invested in the Gutenberg after the 5.0 release as before to get it to a place where we don't think it's just better than what we have today, but it's actually like a world-class web-defining experience, which is what we want to create and what you all deserve, end quote.
Which is all 100% true. I agree with that completely. And bravo to Matt for saying it out loud, frankly, because it needs to be said. It needs, that's the thing that Matt does really well, is gets people excited for what's coming next and the work that's going into it. So,
I mean, what did I tell you? I told you on last week's episode that during the state of the word, Matt will come out, he'll speak about things, and at the end of the thing, you'll be pumped up, you'll be excited, you'll be like, this is so awesome, this is so cool, you know, and you'll be ready to contribute a million lines of code to WordPress.
He does a better job at that than anyone else I know. Like, that is one skill and ability that Matt has always had that that I wish I could somehow learn or absorb.
He's a fantastic speaker.
Yeah. And, somebody smarter than me a long time ago said something, deeply philosophical about how you should strive to be the best qualities of all of your favorite people. Take something that you like about someone and just pluck it out and then add it to yourself. And that is how you become your sort of best version of yourself And Matt, I think, has lots of qualities like that. And his ability to get people jazzed about the direction that things are going is just second to none. And so that's a thing that I wish I had that I don't know how to do.
So the WP GDPR plugin that is actually active active on more than 100,000 websites has a privilege escalation vulnerability. It was reported to the WordPress plugin directory team on November 6th. The plugin was temporarily removed and then reinstated after the issues were patched within 24 hours by its creators. The change log for the most recent release stated there's a couple security fixes, such as they removed the base64 decode function, some escape issues with the prepare function, WPDB. These all look kind of familiar from based on other security vulnerability reports, and only allow modifying WordPress options used by the plugin and by the user capabilities. So based on WordFence did a pretty in-depth article on what's going on here. And they say that they've already begun seeing cases of live sites infected through this attack vector. In these cases, the ability to update arbitrary options values is being used to install new administrator accounts onto the impacted sites.
Pretty clever.
But they go on to say, by leveraging this flaw to set the users can register option to 1 and changing the default role of new users to administrator, attackers can simply fill out the registration form and immediately access a privileged account. And from this point on, they could change these options back to normal and install a malicious plugin or theme containing a web shell or other malware to further infect the victim's site.
Yep. And so the long story short is, once you have the ability to write to the database,
Pretty much.
And so what this spurred it's a bad deal, but I don't want the folks that work on the WP GDPR compliance plugin to get too much bad press, frankly, because like you said, aside from the base64 decode, which doesn't belong in the plugin repo anyways, the prepare function has bitten everyone at some point or another. And then only allowing editing WordPress options that are used by the plugin is something that I bet that most plugins and authors do not even consider as an issue. Mapping their own meta caps to their own roles or to minimize the footprint of things that their plugin can even achieve are things that I don't think most plugin authors do. The BBs do it. We've implemented it in EDD, but I don't think a lot of plugin authors consider that. So these things that are being exploited are not unusual. But this did spur an interesting conversation in the security Slack channel, where the fact that a single site install of WordPress even allows for the default role to be an admin is a little silly, because why would you ever want that to be the case? Just every user that signs up becomes an admin doesn't seem like the way to go. And so while this has been available and an option and a feature in WordPress for all of WordPress's life, it may not need to be. It's different from multi-site, and WordPress multi-site has other concerns when it comes to registration and user roles and things like that. So this isn't necessarily the same problem, but seeing this come through got people thinking a little bit differently about not just the WPDB prepare and the bugs and the things, but the default user role is something that probably needs some attention and some decisions made behind it. So not that I'm trying to let the cat out of the bag or anything, but it's kind of an interesting thought that maybe you don't want an admin to be the default user role ever. Maybe that needs an override. Maybe that should be a decision that gets made with code or a plugin or something else, that maybe it's time to lock it down a little bit more. So
if you're using the WP GDPR compliance plugin, definitely check to see if any new users have been created on your site. And if they have, you're probably going to want to delete them right away, restore a backup of the site from, I guess they say, before November 6th, and then update to version 1.4.3, or better yet, maybe don't use it, because what it does is it actually adds a GDPR checkbox to Contact Form 7, Gravity Forms, WooCommerce, and WordPress Comments. And I believe all of those plugins have their own way of GDPR compliance. They either include a checkbox or a link to things. Mm-hmm. So I don't think users need the WP GDPR compliance plugin, actually.
Generally, the sentiment in the tavern comments, right, is that what is this even necessary for? Plugins already are responsible for including their own thing. So I think originally the idea was for there to be a plugin that would get WordPress over the hump sooner in case WordPress didn't make it there. And it turned out WordPress made it there, but a lot of plugins didn't. And so the fact that they're trying to help others from the outside in, I think, is noble. I think they're trying to do good work and do the right thing, but it's a bummer when something like this happens. But my heart goes out to the team. The WordPress.org security team responded. They did everything that you do when something like this happens, and got in touch with them, and it's all good now. So
John, pop quiz. What is the maximum amount of money WordCamp organizers can charge for tickets on a per day basis?
Oh, well, I can tell you what it's increasing to.
All right,
but,
sure.
What is it, $20? What did it used to be?
For the last 7 years, the maximum amount of money WordCamp organizers could charge for tickets was $20 per day. In 2019, this will increase to $25 per day. This new amount accounts for inflation and provides a bit of breathing room for organizers. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calculator, $20 in January of 2006 is equal to about $25.51 in October of 2018.
That is a terrifying calculation. Have you done that math for anything, Jeff? Like, are you, since 2006, I'm just curious for our listeners, but also for you, are you making 25% more money?
Absolutely not.
Right. I mean, if everything just about across the board from 2006 to now is 25% more expensive than it was 12 years ago, plan ahead for 12 years from now. I mean, it's a scary, scary thing that we're up against right now. But $25 does not seem unreasonable to me. That seems... but you know, from 5 years from now, we might be having a different $30, $35. I can't believe it. In my day, it was only $25, you know?
So I want to emphasize that this is the maximum amount that organizers will be able to charge for tickets. Organizers are highly encouraged to keep the ticket prices as low as possible if they can. The increase is part of a delicate balancing act between not being a financial burden to attend the event and getting 80% or more of attendees to show up.
Right.
So Andrea Middleton, she's a community organizer, works on the WordPress community team. She says that in an ideal world, all WordCamp tickets would be free, just like WordPress is free, but to avoid organizing a conference for 500 registrants and only having 50 people show up on the day of the event, they charge as little as they possibly can for tickets, but just enough that people will show up for the event if they're sleepy that morning or got a last-minute invitation to a pool party or something. So when this was actually proposed back in September, there's quite a few people that commented, and they were in favor of increasing the price. In fact, some people suggested to increase it to 30 or more to account for inflation of the next 5 to 7 years. Yeah. And Ian Dunn, he left a comment, and he actually he raised some interesting points that I thought it'd be kind of interesting for you and I to talk about. But he says, quote, "Is it harder to get sponsorships? It seems like the opposite is true, especially given how much the global sponsorship program covers. Based on experiences in my local community, I suspect that the primary reason for budget shortfalls is that the organizing team is choosing to do extra things beyond what's necessary to meet the goals of a WordCamp. For example, holding after parties at trendy venues, expensive speaker gifts, promotional audio and video equipment." And I thought it, end quote, mm-hmm. and I thought it would be interesting just to kind of ponder how much money could WordCamp save globally if they eliminated the materialistic aspects of the event. I mean, we're talking about t-shirts, speaker gifts, lanyards, the non-essential thing, you know, the nice to have things at a WordCamp.
Ian is right. The issue is that WordCamps aren't really just competing with WordCamps for your attention. They're competing with any other thing that you might want to do on a weekend. And so unfortunately, and maybe this is just my pessimistic realism showing through in the show, but I hesitate to think that your average person is really seeking an education that isn't also fun or enjoyable. They're not just coming to a WordCamp to sit down, watch some talks, and leave. They come because it's an enjoyable experience. It's they come because they want to have a fun time with fun people and meet some new people and everything else. So I agree with Ian that the there is a lot of competition that goes up, trendy venues, speaker gifts. Everyone wants to do better than they did last time. And you can run a bare bones WordCamp. I ran one. You can do it. It can be very fun.
Not every WordPress event needs to be a WordCamp US or a WordCamp Europe, that's which is both the two largest events in the world. And I haven't checked. I could check if I wanted to. I think the information is available. But those two camps have huge budgets.
Yep. And so I think it's like any other event or project, or it is a lot like software, where you kind of come up with what the MVP is to get it done, and you make sure that you achieve those things. And then if you can provide people a better experience, you do that. And sometimes you do that at the expense of literal money. Sometimes you do that and you push a project back a week or two. You decide what your currency is and how valuable that is. And so it makes more sense to push a WordPress release candidate back a week because it wasn't going to get shipped early because it wasn't ready. The requirements for pushing WordPress weren't met. And so you wait another week and you build a better product or a better piece of software at the end. And so for some events and some WordCamps in some places, you can do it and have 30 people. You can have a great time for 2 days and do it on a minimal, if almost non-existent, budget. And other events require thousands and thousands of dollars. Boston was one that was, when I lived in the Northeast, when I lived in Rhode Island, Boston was an expensive WordCamp. The venue was not cheap. Catering was not cheap.
San Francisco, New York. Has a reputation of being super expensive. Right.
And so they can't do it without spending more money. It is impossible for them. And so is WordCamp East Troy competing with WordCamp New York? Absolutely not.
How many attendees did East Troy have? Was it like 30 or something?
30, 32. I think we had 32.
I think it's awesome that you could do a WordCamp with just 32 people.
And I think there was smaller. I think somebody did a smaller one on the other side of the world, Europe. Somebody over somewhere did one where they had 20 or less than 30. It's great, and that's what that's where I think the Ian's point makes the most sense. Is just do what is reasonable for your area and what your community really demands or wants from you. And if you have money in your budget to go the extra mile, if you can do better, you should do better. But if it's going to come at the expense of an extra five or however many dollars, it's up to organizers to decide, hey, like if we we charge an extra $5 and we've got 150 people coming. That gives us enough money to be able to afford XYZ. If you're able to do that math and if it works out, then you should. But I think Ian's point, and I think Andrea's point, and everyone is speaking the same language here, where is budget appropriately and be reasonable with your expenses and make sure that you're not going overboard where you don't need to. Just pay attention to it.
So the WordCamp community team, they actually track this kind of data on what they have to approve the budgets of every one of these WordCamps. Oh, yeah. So they actually track the data and they're able to know how much WordCamps charge for their tickets, but the data is not readily available. In fact, it's a large volume of data. Somebody would need to calculate it, go through it, and present it in a way that's not, you know, confusing. So there's a lot of things involved there, but they do have that data. Based on comments and from what I've seen, many of the WordCamps charge below the $20 amount. They're probably going to keep doing that. In fact, many events in India, they charge somewhere around $6.50 per day for tickets. So depending on where you're at in the world, I thought it'd be cool if somehow they could, if someone had the wherewithal, could go in there, take that data and present it as an infographic where you could see the average ticket price for WordCamps on a per country basis. And if you zoom in, you can actually see, like, you know, numbers or cities or averages for cities or something. I think that would be kind of cool.
And that's one of the things that our friend Morton, you know, really lobbies for pretty hard, is just expose the data. Just give us some version, API, some endpoint where you can see that this data is available, you know, anonymized and safe, and make sure that no one, you know, all that stuff. But once the data is available, then people can build infographics and charts and things with it once it's out there. But without it being out there, it's really locked away. And it being locked away, siloed, is one of the things that I think really rubs the WordPress community the wrong way. Is like, how did decisions get made, or what is the impact of the decisions that have been made? And when there is no exposure to any of that stuff, people wonder why, because we're generally branding ourselves as being so open and free that the things that aren't open yet are anomalies. And so opening that data up might be a good idea.
And speaking of data, if you visit the WordCamp Central website, they have a link here. Actually, they have different reports. So they can create different reports or generated on the data they have. And one of the things you can look at is ticket revenue reports. So you can look at a timestamp, you can look at a particular WordCamp, and you could track how much revenue they've made through that. I think what I'm asking for is a report that doesn't exist yet. So maybe if they had time, somebody could generate that report and they would make that data publicly available. I don't know. But
The bigger data too, right? Is that's like one of the things that WordPress has always struggled with, even on the multi-site side of it, is how do you get all of the data from all of the sites all together to see the biggest picture, you know, like how many WordPress sites exist in the world? How many plugins, updates are there? The numbers like that, I think, are really interesting to folks. And so I agree that it's one thing to see it site by site or year by year. But the trending and the bigger things, I agree that that's what I was talking about.
How would you like to have one of those giant screen TVs like on your wall, and it's a dashboard and you see plugin, like the fire hose of WordPress data. So you see updates, plugin installs, track, you know, it's all there.
You know? Well, Ed, you know, people like to joke that, you know, that there's some Illuminati type decision-making process that happens around a lot of dumb things in WordPress core, but it is easy to imagine that Matt or someone else is sitting with that exact dashboard, but it does not exist. There is nothing that is like that. If there is, it is tucked hidden far away. I've never seen it, but it would be pretty cool. We should build one. Let's just make it happen.
Speaking of dashboards, that reminds me of, a long time ago, I think this was back at, this might have been, I don't know if this was the first WordCamp I ever attended, Frisco, Texas, WordCamp Dallas. Oh, when was that? 2008 or 2009? I attended that event, and Woopra was just being released and developed. And Woopra was this desktop sort of analytics software, and you could see people visiting your site, and if they registered to your site, you could track them, you could chat with them, and you can see when they were leaving comments. And boy, it was all kinds of cool data. It was a beautiful piece of software, and I don't know if they're still around, or I think they got rid of the desktop client, and it's all software as a service now. But oh man, that was cool stuff back in the day.
Looks like they're still around and still kind of doing the same thing, but yeah, a very SaaS type of vague memory of Woopro. Huh.
Yeah, I loved it. It was one of my favorite things. So, off the top of my head here, I can't think of really anything else that I won't mention or talk about. We're about 3 weeks out.
Yeah, it's coming fast
from WordCamp US, and I will be here at home, my cozy home. There will be no musicians in the corner playing music. but I'll be watching the live stream.
That's amazing.
What is? There's music everywhere.
Yeah, and like the live bands playing during WordCamp US lunch, because it's the biggest lunchroom you've ever seen. It's incredible, and so to have a band echoing throughout the whole thing, there's just nothing like it. I look forward to that.
And it's kind of cool that
you're getting tongue tied like tenets. I get it. It's contagious.
Two tenets of WordPress's existence: jazz and barbecue. Mm-hmm. And it's great that over the years Matt has stayed true to those two tenets, and at any WordCamp he has been able to organize and put together, you know, put his stamp of approval on. They always have those two things.
And I'm a little surprised that it hasn't been taken to higher levels. You know, jazz is a very big genre of music with many different subgenres, and so there's a lot of different artists or little Easter eggs or nods, things that jazz as a type of music could have been more deeply integrated into the WordPress culture and community that it hasn't been. So I'm a little surprised that didn't take off a little bit more.
Speaking of jazz, do we know the jazz musician for WordPress 5.0?
Nope. Matt always keeps that real close to his chest, right? It's like
except there was one time. I think it was 4.9. They actually released the jazz name early.
I don't remember
when they were showing it off. But I can only imagine who. Well, I'm hyping up WordPress 5.0. But if you read what some of Matt's comments, he wants WordPress 5.0, the release, to be as anticlimactic as it can be. It's just a release. He wants it to be.
Yeah, that's
not. It's not going to be.
There's no way. There's no way that's true. Like, of course, 5.0 is a milestone release. It's the 15th year. It's Gutenberg releases are ramping up quickly. I've joked that Gutenberg will be 5.0 at the exact same time that WordPress hits 5.0.
It's like, almost there.
It's almost there. You know, talking it down is like classic misdirection. Yeah, it's not a big deal. It's like, I don't know. It is a big deal. Of course it's a big
5.0 deal. 5.0 is no different than 4.9 or the release before. Well, this one has a brand new editor that everyone will interface with. So I guess it's kind of a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And Matt's previous quote about messing with the editor, I think, is right. It is the gateway with which you publish your posts. Messing with it is going to rile people up one way or the other. Some people will be excited, some people won't be. It's definitely messing with the editor is going to get people excited.
And I wish we had better audio quality, but there's still some things from the interview we did with Andrew Roberts, the CEO of Tiny, that have been circulating in my head. And I go back to when he talks about, so we asked him, you know, is this block-based concept, is this something that you're going to implement into the Tiny MCE library? And he says, his reply is basically, no, we're just going to watch and see. We're going to observe, because what they found is that the way people are used to writing is just classic, you know, Microsoft Word, Microsoft Word way of doing things, where you have a toolbar at top, you have this blank screen canvas in front of you, and you just write and do stuff. And they have found that when you venture out of that, that it's not what users expect. And of course, their users, their customers, are not demanding that they change their approach, and they're not demanding for a block-based editor. So there's that as well. But I just, some of the things from that interview have been circulating through my head.
Me too. I've been thinking about it a lot, because I feel like they are playing the long game that I think wins, which is blocks are, they are intentional, intentionally restrictive. They are purposefully saying, they're putting boundaries in place where there have never been boundaries before, and drawing attention to the boundaries that have maybe existed, like paragraph tags or divs or things, right? Like really calling them out. But the 5 or 10 year timeline for blocks is that people are going to get sick of being locked into blocks and want to float them and move them and have columns and move them around. They don't, we've had a lot of freedom, and we're choosing to take that away and calling it a simpler, better editing experience. But
this is the Gutenberg we're talking about today. I mean, we could be talking about a different thing after phase 2 and 3, which is of course site customization.
It's right. But there's a lot that needs to happen with blocks, and I agree. But there's a lot of work that has to happen after 5.0 ships, and hopefully the automatic employees that Matt has tasked to do that continue the charge and are able to iterate on it for at least the next 2 years, the same way that Gutenberg has taken almost 2 years of development so far, because Tiny MCE has 10 years and plus longer when you count their own external experience of making a really great WYSIWYG editor. And so it might take 10 years to get the block-based editor right. We just don't know.
We don't know. Only time will tell. And you know what?
Time will tell.
We're out of time. So you can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes at wbtavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeffer, JEFFR0. And John?
I'm going to stop talking about my Twitter account for a while, because I think I'm burnt out with the whole thing. So GitHub at JJJ or JJJ.blog, and maybe a new domain and something else sometime. I don't know.
Oh,
so that's where you find me for now.
I know of some software you could use on that new domain, but I'm not going to get into it, but a little teaser for our listeners.
I'm already running Gutenberg on my own blog, so I guess we'll see.
All right, so long, everybody. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John.
Bye, John. Bye, everybody.